There's no business like show business. The first choice of my guest this morning on BBC Radio Nottingham, it's Colin Bower. Welcome, or indeed, welcome back to BBC Radio Nottingham.
Oh, thank you very much. I doubt if anyone will remember me. It's
well,
a long time.
I'm sure they will. Presenter of the Golden Years back in the day.
Oh, yeah. 6 years I did the Golden Years, and I didn't miss one Sunday.
Really?
Yes.
And you were just looking for the turntable?
Yes. I couldn't do the job today. I have to have turntables and records.
Yes. There is one. Oh, there was, someone's moved it. There was one over there a couple of weeks ago, but it's gone now.
It's gone, the world we live in today is not one I understand. It's beyond my comprehension completely. But we're going to play music. How are you going to play music? Digital.
It's magical. Magical and digital, yes.
Magical
and
digital.
Yes. But it has come from vinyl. So the irony is we've taken the vinyl and digitized it. So, it sounds glorious.
I read recently, only last week, that vinyls are on the up. They're selling again.
Absolutely, they are. And more vinyl sold, I think, than downloads in the past few months. So, absolutely. There's no business like show business. Your
That's
opening
true.
Song.
Yes. Why, would you like to know one? Why I
I'd
chose it?
I'd love to, Colin.
Well, I chose it because I really never had any desire to do anything else. Right from a young lad, I used to go, as we used to say, we went to the pictures. I think, by the way, going to the pictures back then was more of an event. You had curtains, you had coloured lights. It was some of the more older listeners will know exactly what I'm talking in. A lady would show you to your seats. Another lady would come down with ice creams. It was entirely different. But would you like to know about my very first appearance in public?
I'd love to.
I was a very young lad. And it took place in the grounds of a military hospital, North London, just before the war. I was happy in Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And it was a lovely day. I can remember it this very day. And I'm standing there with my dear mother, watching these children cavort. And I suddenly said, "Mummy, I'm in this." And she said, "Well, dear, you'd better go out there." So I ran out, and Dean, I got my first laugh and my first round of applause. I was hooked. That was it. And another reason why I've chosen this is because I worked for a short time for a radio station in what was called Lorenzo Marx. Don't ask me what it's called today. Something else. I don't know. Lorenzo Marx in Mozambique. And the management said, "We've got a 10-minute bit to fill every night. So we want you to do a program called LM's Evening Star." And I had this piece of music. Were you able to get the Wally Stott recording?
That was Wally Stott.
Oh, it is.
That was Wally Stott. Yes, it was.
Great.
I think I found the very versions you requested of all of
right.
them. Actually.
Yes, because it's a lovely. And I remember they wanted. They said, "What we want is a really big star every night." Now, Dean, you may not appreciate this, but you soon run out of what you might call big stars like Frank Sinatra, Bing Crosby. After a while, you're doing the slightly lesser ones. Then you start the ladies. I ran out of stars, so I said, "Can I do instrumentalists?" And they said, "Yes." So I did Charlie Coons, Russ Conway, and then I ran out of them. So then I went back to the oldest routine of all. Back Tonight by special request. Needless to say, I never had a single letter because the program ran 10 minutes and they gave me so many commercials that you could just about manage one chorus, if you were lucky, of whatever song was being sung. But that's it. So that's no business like show business.
The second track then, chosen by Colin Bower, my very special guest today, is this one, Underneath the Arches. Dean Jackson here, and the music chosen this hour by Colin Bower, actor, after-dinner speaker, presenter, many strings to his bow, as you'll hear. And you were swaying along to Underneath the Arches.
That
there.
Took me back to doing the show. I did a tour in Underneath the Arches. I'll tell you a lovely story about Flanagan. By the way, did you know that song they sang, the first time they sang it was in Derby?
Was he really?
Yes, they sang it in Derby. Now, take a guess, Dean, how many encores remember, it's their very first time they've sung underneath the arches. Mm. They're in Derby. And guess how many encores before they actually just walked off the stage? Enough is enough.
Well, I always thought we were restricted to one encore, but from what you're saying, that you're implying there were more than that.
They sang that song. They sang it the first time. Then they sang seven more times. The audience just would not let them go. More, more, clap, clap, clap.
Seven times.
Seven times they sang.
Doing the same song.
Doing the same song. They did it over and over again. It was such a smash hit. I mean, it sounds dated today, of course, but back then it was an absolute smash hit. But would you like a lovely story about Mr. Flanagan?
Of course.
Well, these days we get so much disaster on the news. I have a lot of story. He was in London and he heard that there was some possible work up in Scotland. So he starts walking. Can you believe it? Mark you, this was back in 1900 and dot, so he wouldn't have been knocked down by the traffic. But what he used to do was he used to walk along, and people either would give, the odd car would give him a lift, and if he wanted a drink, he would knock on a door and say, excuse me, I'm walking to Scotland, do you think I could have a drink of water? And he was always given it. And he's halfway up the country, and he goes to this one house, and this is perfectly true. They said, well, you're walking to Scotland? He said, yes. Well, they said, where did you start? He said, London. Right, they said. Well, you're going no further for 3 days. And they invited this total stranger in, and for 3 days they gave him regular meals 3 times a day, told him to rest and build himself up. He took their names and addresses, and this is the lovely part. From that time on, he became, of course, a smash hit and a star. Every time they had a Christmas, a birthday, an anniversary, there was always presents. And it went on, and when there were new members of the family, they got a little something. He never forgot the family that gave him food and shelter for 3 days and 3 nights.
Even when he became a big star?
Oh, even when he was doing new shows at the Victoria Palace, every time, I mean, they stayed at the Victoria Palace for one run for 15 years non-stop. Of course, they changed the show, obviously, but that takes some doing. And they did it for 15 years, and every time they had a new show, all the family were sent opening night tickets. He never forgot them. It didn't stop until his death.
Explain why that song means so much in your life.
Well, I have played the part of Chesney Allen, and I just like that sort of music. I'm old, you see. As I was saying a couple of days ago, I'm a different generation. I like melody and words that you can sing along to.
No, absolutely. But I'm interested in you playing Chesney Allen and what that was like.
Sorry?
What was it like to play Chesney Allen?
Oh, wonderful. In fact, on one occasion, what they used to do always, after the show, they used to go around to the foyer and say goodnight to the customers going out. Where it didn't matter whether they were Palladium, Victoria, whatever, they always said goodnight to their audience. They would walk round through the stalls, and as you were leaving, they'd say, bye-bye, thank you for coming, hope you enjoyed it. And and somebody came up to me one night and said, that was lovely. I said, oh, thank you very much, that's very kind of you. Well, I used to know him well. I said, you did? Yes. He was my agent, because when Chesney Allen had to retire from performing because the lights had messed up his eyes, so he became the agent for the crazy gang.
Right.
But there's a lovely story about him too. I forget who it was. Leslie Crowther, and it might have been, what's his name, Hud?
Roy?
Roy Hud.
Yeah.
I think they were doing the Flanagan and Allen story, and they were near Ilminster, which is where Chesney Allen... So Roy Hud went along and asked him if he'd appear. By now he's older than me, and he said no. So what they did was, and this would have been wonderful, I don't know, that he said, I'll come and sing one chorus. So what he did was, when they were going to do Underneath the Arches, they were doing the usual walk up and down the stage, and then went across on one turn, and it was dark, Leslie Crowther faded and the real one came on. And every time I've heard Roy Hudd say this, there was a gasp in the audience as they suddenly realised the real one was there. And he did one or two choruses, and then they did the reverse. They went back into the shadow, and then it was Leslie Crowther again. And at the curtain call, Roy Hudd would say, "Well, you probably notice somebody is missing." He says, "Thank you very, very much for the reception, but it was past his cocoa time."
It's BBC Radio Nottingham, Dean Jackson here with my special guest today. It's Colin Bauer.
Mark Dennison on BBC.
Wow. The Dream of Olwen, that is chosen by Colin Bauer. What a huge arrangement that
Terrific.
Is.
Terrific. Brilliant.
What made you choose that one, Colin?
Well, it's from a spooky film called While I Live, and I've always thought there's more to this existence than just the rat race of life and living, and I won't bore you with them, but when I was younger, I did have a couple of very strange experiences which convinced me, and I've had an interest in it ever since. Would you like one story that has got nothing to do with me, but is imprinted in his autobiography of Dennis Healy? It's a fascinating little spooky story, and it's not me. So that's why I'm happy to tell
you. Well, if it's a good story, and you're a great storyteller, I think we should hear it.
No. I came across this by pure chance. I was one day at home, and I happened to turn on the BBC, and Mr. Healy, who was Lord Healy, I don't know if he was at the time, was talking about his recently published autobiography. And he said to the young lady who was interviewing him, "Do you know, I have written thousands and thousands of words about politics and politicians and personalities, but every time one of you talks to me about my autobiography, all you talk about is this one little incident that takes no more than three or four paragraphs." Which, of course, convinced me that we're more interested in spooks than politicians, obviously. This is that strange little story. He was on holiday in Italy. Oh, by the way, before I tell you it, he said in the interview, he said when he was writing the book and he came to this time incident in his life, he thought, "Well, I better not put this in because any credibility I have as a politician will fly out of the nearest window."
Right.
And then I thought, no, I argued with myself. I said, "No, wait a minute, Dennis. This happened. This book is my life. It goes in. And this is the strange, spooky story." He was on a holiday in Italy many, many years ago, and he woke up one night. And he did what we all did. He had a yawn, a scratch, and he turned over. Mm. As he turned over, he saw someone at the end of the bed. So he looks back. Standing at the end of the bed is a very close friend whose name, I'm sorry to say, I have forgotten.
Don't worry.
Page 360. So this friend raises his right hand and gives a wave and says, "Hello, Dennis, I'm dead, but don't worry, I'm fine," and vanishes. So Mr. Healy thought, "Well, I've just had some sort of strange dream," and goes to peep. At 7 o'clock that morning, the BBC telephone him. His telephone goes in his hotel room, and it's the BBC phoning to say, "We're sorry to interrupt your holiday, Mr. Healy, but we have some rather sad news. Your close friend and colleague, Mr. So-and-so, died last night. Would you record a brief tribute?" So Mr. Healy said, "Well, of course I will. But can you do me a favour? Can you tell me the time of the death?" And you're ahead of me, I can tell that. The time that Dennis Healy woke up in Italy and saw his friend at the foot of the bed was the time that the gentleman died in the United Kingdom.
That's chilling, isn't it?
It's fascinating.
Wow. It's BBC Radio Nottingham. Dean Jackson here. Colin Bauer is my guest. I have to tell you, Colin in Mansfield says, "Welcome home, Colin, a Golden Years fan." That's from
very kind.
Another Colin in Mansfield. Back with Colin in just a second. Got the news headlines on the way for you. But first, this Sylvia in Beeston's just been on the phone.
BBC Radio Nottingham.
So you heard When You Wish Upon a Star, chosen by Colin Bauer, all linked in with his pantomime career. How did that career go, Colin?
Well, before we start that, let me say, you didn't tell me a lovely, pretty girl was going to come in. That's revived me a bit for the next half hour. Thank you very much. She's a lovely girl.
Oh, delightful.
Yes,
delightful.
And by the way, also, I must congratulate you. I'm sitting here amazed. I'm so impressed. You're producing music, you're reading the thing off the screen. What an amazing world it is. Just for a second, let me go back to LM Radio. When I started there, I had 6 turntables, 3 either side of me.
Wow.
Yes, and I sat on a chair that was on wheels, that was on a railway track. So to get to the discs right at the back, it was a commercial station. Some of the commercials were only 15 seconds, so you had to push the chair back, cue the record, get back just in time as Heinz Baked Beans or someone was finishing, play the next record. The volume controls were the size of a Muhammad Ali's fist, and you sat there, and so different today. I am so impressed. I couldn't do it.
Oh, Colin, believe me, what you were doing was far more impressive. Trust me on that. Really, trust me. It was far, far more impressive. Anyway, back to the panto career.
Yes, it was that lovely girl who put me right off for a minute. Right. Well, the pantos, yes, well, I've done a few, and that's why I played it. Just you asked me to choose music that would remind me of things, and I did a few, and people play tricks, you know, when you're doing pantomimes. I was in one of them. I was the Baron or the King. I was always either the Baron or the King. And I remember the producer said to me, every time you come on, the plot advances. And I hadn't realized that. It was all the others do their speciality acts. But when the Baron or the King comes on, the plot moves forward a wee bit more. And to illustrate the toughness of show business, I was in a pantomime up in Mansfield that was put on by a lovely man called Roy Menting. And Roy came up to me and he said, Colin, I'm so pleased with the way everything's going and the way you're doing everything. He said, I have been here, he said, for 13 years. If I'm here next year, you're already employed. Naturally, next year, he didn't get the contract.
Oh.
But that's show business. And people played tricks. There was one point where I was the Baron and I had to find a gold coin. And a chap called Freddie Parrotface Davis.
I remember, yes.
And he had, instead of putting the coin right on top of the bag, he put it right at the very bottom. And I was about 10 minutes finding it. And I remember Bob Carroll G's with Spit the Dog leant forward and said, when you're ready, Colin, in your own time, because I had to produce this coin and I couldn't find the wretched thing. But that's why I've got it. It's because it just reminds me. You said, choose music that brings you back, and pantomimes. I'll tell you another reason I love doing panto. I've reached an age where remembering the lines is not as easy as it was. And so one thing about a pantomime, it's like giving a talk. If you lose the words, it doesn't matter, because pantomimes, people can say anything and do anything. It's not like a straight play where you've got to have everything right. So it was a wonderful time. By the way, on the words, regarding words, I would have been terrified to be in a play that was written by Agatha Christie. She would turn up now and again and sit through the whole show of the Mousetrap. Mm. And if you changed one word, she would come back and she'd say, Dean, you're doing a very good job saying the words, but I would appreciate it if you would say the words that I wrote.
Just one word difference.
Oh, yes. She said, I am very careful when I choose the words. I choose the words for a purpose. It is a mystery play. And I don't like my words being changed.
Wow. Incredible.
So thank God I was never in a play.
Absolutely. It's BBC Radio Nottingham. Dean Jackson here with Colin Bauer.
Every actor will tell you this. You're out of work a lot of time. So you have to get some work. And my bank manager summoned me one day and said, Colin, I'm a bit concerned. I said, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. He said, I'm concerned because, he said, you appear to be taking money out of the bank and not putting any in.
Oh, dear.
So I said, well, you've summed up the situation with incredible clarity. And he said, well, you'll have to get a job. So I got a job on a ship as the entertainment officer. It was my actual title was passenger liaison officer. Today, the same job has the title cruise director. It's the same job. And I stood it for 7 months. I lasted in it twice as long as anybody before me. And you might ask why, because really the job was wonderful. I had a lovely cabin, I had a balcony, I had my own steward, the food was great, I travelled. Problem was, we had passengers. Had it not been for the passengers.
Did they get in the way?
They did. Yes, the thing was, putting it bluntly, you couldn't please them. Whatever right. you did, half the ship was happy, the other half wasn't. And also they were just a little bit strange. In fact, when I joined the ship...
Not all of them, surely.
Most of them, most of them. The purser called me and he said, Colin, he said, there will be times when the passengers will say very silly things. And he said, this doesn't mean they're idiots or as thick as a plank. It means the cruise is a success. They are so relaxed. They are not thinking what they are saying. So I was actually asked, and what I'm telling you from now on is the truth. Mark you, every word I've told you so far is the truth.
Of course.
I was asked, excuse me, what time is the 10 o'clock film? When is the midnight buffet? On one occasion, the purser was standing by the lift, and the lift went down. And a little lady looked at him and said, excuse me, do you happen to know if this lift goes up?
And these are real questions.
They were absolutely, yes. That happens every day. So, I worked on a ship for a little while. It was, if it hadn't been for the passengers, it would have been wonderful.
The next track is by Tommy Dorsey, and so many people are hoping that you chose this, actually. I've had a number of texts from people saying, I do hope Colin chose this one.
Good afternoon. This is Colin Bauer on behalf of Ron Stevens with the Golden Years. 1 hour of music with melody from the 20s, 30s and the 40s. And if you'd like a record played from those years, just drop me a note to the Golden Years, BBC Radio Nottingham, Nottingham. And if I can find it, I'll play it.
It's just like it was yesterday when you say it, and you do it so perfectly.
Oh, I nearly forgot it.
No, that was brilliant, and everybody wanted to hear you do that. That's just fantastic. So, 6 years at BBC Radio Nottingham,
yes,
doing the Golden Years.
Do you know, I only came originally just for a short time, because I mentioned Ron Stevens,
yes.
And Ron Stevens had done the programme for years, I forget, 10 or 15 years. Do you know how Ron came in and did it? He walked in one day. He was a local builder. And he walked in with a pile of gramophone records when you were in York House and said, could I see the manager, please? So the manager came down. And he said, I'm Ron Stevens, and I like music with melody. You obviously don't have any. I've brought you a few records. And the manager said, come up to the office. So he went up to the office and he had a talk, and he suddenly realised they weren't really playing what you might call the older music. Mm. So he said to Ron, just like Coronation Street, well, we'll do it for 6 weeks and we'll call it the Golden Years. See how it goes. Well, it went and went and went. The problem was poor old Ron had a terrible stutter and Alan Clifford, who I think is still with you.
He is, yes.
Yes. They used to record the programme, and poor Alan had to do all the editing to get rid of the stairs.
It wasn't BBC Radio Nottingham that brought you to Nottingham, though. You were to another station before, of course.
No, we won't mention the other one.
Oh, really?
No, well, if you want to, yes.
Yeah, I think we should.
I came up to work for Radio Trends as a newsreader, and then I ended up playing music through the night. I was told once that we had such a low audience that the ratings company gave us 1 point because they said, well, somebody must be listening. It wasn't my fault. I kept telling the management that day is not the same as night, and we should occasionally have, say, lightly slower music. In fact, during the war, when the factories were going, they worked through the days and nights, and at night they realised it's not the same. People are not the same at night in the day. So they played music, but of a slower beat, because we can't work as quickly at night. Anyway, there it is. It's ancient history. Yeah.
Then you came to BBC Radio Nottingham, where you did the golden years, as you say, for 6 years. Do you remember any of the regular writers, people, listeners that would write in and request songs? Did the same songs come round?
Oh, all the time. Yes. I mean, it was always... I think Vera Lynn, who I think we're going to hear from later. We heard always Al Jolson was popular. Yeah. Bing Crosby, of course, Frank Sinatra, Jack Buchanan, Gracie Fields, Anne Shelton. Oh, they were all almost every week the same people. I was so lucky, really. I had, without boasting, I suppose I am boasting, I used to get round about 150 letters a week. And, of course, you can only play so many. And it was great days, 6 years. But poor old Ron, I was invited to fill in while he was poorly. Sadly, he didn't make it, so they asked me to stay on. And I did, until somebody from the BBC phoned up and said, "We don't want you anymore."
Oh. Irving Berlin.
Oh, yes.
Help you out anymore. Do what the buglers command. They're in the army and not in the band. This is the army, Mr. Brown. You and your baby went to town. She had you worried, but this is war, and she won't worry you anymore.
Irving Berlin, and this is the Army. Colin Bauer, why this track?
Oh, desperation. I was in Canada. My sister married a Canadian, and I went out to Canada, wrongfully thinking that as the family didn't want me to be an actor, if I went to Canada, I'd be on my own. Of course, what nobody told me was that in Canada in 1948, there was no theatre. So I did several things. And then a war started. I don't know what it was. It might have been the Korean War. And the government decided to have what they called a direct officer entry. Well, I didn't want to be a private, did I? I mean, who would want to be a private? So I thought, well, I can do that. So I went down to the recruiting station and I walked in and I said, I'd like to sign up for this officer entry. Well, he said, you're more than welcome, sir. Could we have proof of education? I said, proof of education, yes. Yes, he said, we must have proof. So I said, right. I said, what did you actually want? Well, he said, have you got a certificate? I said, no, because I'd never sat an exam in my life. I was terrible at school. So I said, well, I'll go home and write to the headmaster. He said, right. And when you get the letter, come back in. Now, Mr. Porter, my headmaster in King Edward's in Bath, always used an old dip-in pen. So I thought, well, if I'm going to make it as authentic as possible, I went to the local post office where they had a dip-in pen, and I took a large piece of paper, and I wrote a letter to myself. I waited 2 weeks, and I went along to the recruiting officer, and I said, I've got the letter. He looked at it and said, have you got the envelope? Oh, I said, you wanted the envelope. You didn't tell me that. I said, I'm sorry, I've destroyed the envelope. He said, can't your school afford printed heading letter? I said, no, there's been a war on. Of course, he said, shortage of ink. I said, exactly. And he looked at me and he said, you're just the sort we need in the army.
Vera Lynn and When They Sound the Last All Clear, chosen by my guest this afternoon, Colin Bauer. Colin, why this song?
Well, I wrote to Vera Lynn and told her this story, and I will tell it to you. When I was here as the Golden Years, some of your colleagues were a little naughty, and they opened my letters. And one of my friends did not care for Vera Lynn's singing, so he wrote, making out he was a farmer in Bungay, and that whenever Vera Lynn sang, whenever she sang, his output from the cows was greatly reduced. Well, somebody was naughty at the BBC. They opened my letter, saw about, read about this cow, the cows and the farmer in Bungay, Willow Farm. Mm-hmm. And so they went to the news editor, who instantly dispatched a news reporting team and a reporter. And they went
to the farm.
Yeah, they went looking for Willow Farm. Of course, it didn't exist. They came back after a couple of hours. When I came in and told them it was a joke, my friend doesn't like Vera Lynn, of course, but the one good thing came out of it, they never again opened my letters. And I told Vera Lynn that, and I've had a lovely letter back from her saying she loves this story, because obviously not everybody loves her singing. By the way, Dean, I know we're pushed for time. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Oh, no, my absolute pleasure. We're not quite done yet. What was it that persuaded you to take to the radio microphone in the first place, Colin?
Well, you mean to become a disc jockey?
Yes, to become a disc jockey.
Well, do you know something? We're going into the realms of philosophy now. When I was a youngster, really young, I had a wind-up gramophone, and my mother wasn't surprised at all when I told her I was doing it professionally, because even before I could read, and records were very cheap in those days, I ran a request programme. And under the double eagle was my request, and I started it. I dropped the needle in for half an inch, took it off, and then I'd say to my mum, "What would you like, Mummy?" And she said, "Teddy Bear's Picnic." And I couldn't read, but I'd find it. And if it was time for bed, I'd say, "I can't go yet, I've got to finish my programme." And I had to play the last half inch of Under the Double Eagle. When I told her years later that I was actually doing it for real, she said, "I'm not at all surprised."
What was the highlight of all of the careers that you've done, if you had to choose one moment that stands out?
Oh, doing the golden years for 6 years. I'm not an idiot, am I?
No, far from it.
Hello, there's a lovely man come in.
There is a lovely man. It's Paul Robey. He's up next, actually.
Paul Robey.
You two go back a while.
I thought he died years ago.
Colin Bower gave me a warning about working in radio when I started at Radio Trent in 1982.
What was the warning?
That perhaps I should think about another career.
I didn't say that, did I?
No, not in so many words. No. You were very helpful and supportive, aren't
I? I hope so.
Colin Bower, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for your time, and thank you for your great stories as well.